What?
This is Gina Cressy interviewing Amy Spollett on July 31st, 1996. We're in Orono Cottage in Bayside, Maine. Amy, if you could tell me a little bit about when you first came to Bayside, what some of your early memories are, anything that you can share with us, we'd love to hear.
Well, my first trip to Bayside was in 1931 to spend time with my aunt. My whole family came. We came on Route 1, an Atlantic Highway, which is now named Cross Street, which is now quite wide from what it was in 1931. It took us between 7 and 8 hours to get from Boston to Bayside. When we came, it was pouring great guns, and my folks said, "This can't be the place," because it did not have any eye appeal on that particular day. It only took a very short time, though, for us to feel that this was a place that we would love to be, and it has been that way ever since. I guess that's one of the unique things about Bayside, is that generation after generation of families have come here.
Yeah.
I'm here now for probably the fifth generation, and if I took my aunt into consideration, it might even go back further to the sixth. It's a very unique place. Many people who are here now and are old-timers here came in off the highway just to see what was down in the end of this road and went, this is wonderful. Let's see, who can I tell you? Ellie Lagner was one of those. I remember their family when they came in with two little girls and a very little boy named Norman, and they stayed. Every year they came back from Connecticut and then Michigan and Maryland, I don't know, all kinds of places, but this has happened to many, many families. Okay, well, that first Sunday, oh, and you know Joe Huntoon.
Sure.
I remember Joe when he was a little boy. He was always very tall for his age, and I used to be so enthralled and interested in that kid because he always looked as if he had things under control, and his head was a mass of blonde curls. I've never forgotten it. So anyway, here we were for this first time on a holiday weekend. I think it was the 4th of July. No, it wasn't. It was well into July. It wasn't a holiday, but we were here just for a few days. And my uncle, Harold Hook, asked if my father and I would like to go fishing. I had never been fishing in my life. Sounded great. Well, down toward Little River, there were a fish weirs. And we get into the boat. Uncle Harold rowed. My father, not being a person who liked water, held on to the sides of the rowboat as if he were going to capsize momentarily. We got to the fish weirs, all dropped our lines, and within, well, perhaps an hour and a half, can't remember exactly, we had something like 20 to 24 flounders. In a pail. It was very exciting, just with drop lines just sitting there. We came back, cleaned them, and had them for lunch. So that was a very exciting thing for me.
What year would you around with that?
That was the very first year that I came, 1931. Yep. Then up in back of the cottages on Broadway, in back of where Carl Mattson and the rest of those folks live, where now it is a sort of a mud hole and a place for storing boats, cradles, and what have you. That was a very, very much used horseshoe court. There were probably four pits going back north and south on the setup there, and there were benches up on the banking. I don't even know if the banking's still there, but we spent hundreds of hours every summer, all of us kids, pitching horseshoes. I often wondered about the people on Broadway because we'd be up there at 7 in the morning and you'd hear ping as the horseshoes hopefully were making ringers. And every year, at least once during the summer, there was a big tournament that involved, I don't know, there was just several counties around, but anyway, cars came from all over the place. And there was an all-day horseshoe tournament.
Now, who would have organized that? Would have that been people in Bayside?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there was an association, horseshoe association, probably in the state at that time. Of course, everything in Bayside's changed drastically when the war came and people had cars after that, until the frequent availability of automobiles. When you came to Bayside, you stayed. At one point, if I can recall correctly, there were, I think, 5 stores down here. Where Blair is now was a little store. Mr. Tuttle had that, and a photography service in there, and the post office. Right in back of that, the large cottage, I can't even think who's in it, but anyway, Ken Higgins had a store there. Then the little store, little house where the Weisenbecks live, was up on the upper road at the corner of Clinton, and that was moved sometime later, but the Hastings had a store there, a rather good store. And if we went up to get something there, Mrs. Hastings always said, you know, we're going to have that very thing for supper tonight. Well, that was always a standard remark for us. Then next to where the Haywards are in the Tudor Cottage, there was a store called the Boys Store.
What street is that on?
That's on Clinton.
On Clinton, okay.
Yeah, on Clinton. And that was a gathering place for us kids at night. My brother played the trumpet. Somebody played. I can't imagine how this all happened. And it couldn't happen now because people would complain. But we were doing wonderful things, but people would complain. The same ways I understand someone's complaining about the basketball court right now. I cannot imagine removing that. What would kids that age have to do except get into trouble? So let's keep the basketball courts. So anyway, there was that store. Then there was one where Atlantic Highway across comes down and swings out. There's a little house that has now 2 huge evergreens that were once very cute little things. Now they've completely consumed the house. But that was Brown's Corner. And Mr. and Mrs. Brown lived in the little house and had a store there. Of course, what's on Route 1 now, the Hideaway and the Steer Place and the Bayside Store and all that, that was all just woods. And then we went down around, Route 1 came down around Brown's Corner and came out where the Dos Amigos now is. And that also was a store. But when we came to Bayside, the man and the family left you in Bayside for the summer, and he went back to Boston or wherever, Bangor, Augusta, wherever. So you had to buy your grub in the little local stores.
And so there was enough business to support several stores at the same time.
Yep, those were all there. Speaking of the tennis, the basketball courts, when I first came, there were tennis courts there, and they were not used. There were also tennis courts up at the golf club. As you go in the driveway to the right of the driveway there, there were tennis courts. So we used to be able to play up there. We paid a large sum of probably 50 cents in order to have the privilege to play there. And then the courts down in front of the inn, but they weren't being used and were in disrepair, and the space was totally wasted. So my brother and a bunch of the fellows said, let's ask if we can make a basketball court, which they did. So that was in approximately 1933, 1934, probably. And they played, and there was even a tournament that would go back and forth between the Belfast team and the Bayside team, and people gathered down there evenings to watch the basketball games, which were very, very exciting.
Okay.
Much cheering and yelling. And again, a wonderful thing for kids to do, because if you don't have something for them to do, they'll find something and you won't like what they find, probably.
And you'll really have something to play with.
So let's keep the basketball courts. Now remember, these kids played till they got heated to the 110 degree heat, you know, but no showers. This is hard for my grandchildren to understand. No showers, no bathtubs, no hot water, no washing machine, no dryer, no laundromat in Belfast. That was never heard of. So you heated the water on the stove, and which was a wood stove we had just like this one. And that's how we did our bathing and washing, carrying buckets of water back and forth.
What a job.
Yeah. And our cooking was done on a wood stove. So we always had to, the mothers, at least in our family, had to come home and plan to get fire going and so on and so forth. And always, at the beginning of each summer, there was a big load of wood dumped outside here. I think Jack did that, who was also the garbage man, the lawn cutting man, the street care man, everything. Jack would dump this big load of wood, and then we would have to carry it in through our kitchen and out under the front porch and stack it, and would use it all summer.
Could you tell us the location of the cottage that you're talking
about? Yes, the cottage I'm speaking about was next to the Orono, going toward, you face the Orono to the left of it. I don't know what you call it, going down.
Overlooking the auditorium park?
Yeah. And speaking of auditorium park, when we came, the line of trees down in the park now marks where, from that point down to the curve in the road, there was the biggest, ugliest building that you could possibly imagine, which was called the Tabernacle. And it was used, of course, originally by the people who established this little community, the Methodist camp meeting. Wesleyan Methodist Grove. Camp Meeting Grove or something. Anyway, started up in this little area. And that was still there when we were youngsters. It was an eyesore, and of course you had no view of the water whatsoever. All you saw was this thing. But it was wonderful for nighttime hide and seek, kick the can, hoist the green sail, all those good games, which we as teenagers, and teenagers today would rather scoff that out. We played those things in the evenings. And even I can remember two years I guess, when we did have a week-long camp meeting time. People came from everywhere in the state. Cars parked everywhere, funny old cars.
What decade would this have been?
Well, that again was in, that was before the war.
Okay, so they were still having meetings?
Yes, not frequently, but and the Bangor Chapel did have a little chapel in it where people from Bangor held their own individual services if they wished. But many of the chairs in Bayside, perhaps even some that we're sitting in here, came from the auditorium, tabernacle. And they had benches. Big wooden benches, which people, when it was finally torn down, it was condemned because it was so dangerous. It had a bell tower and a bell.
Were you teenagers allowed to go in there and play your dance, or did you have
We didn't go in there to play. We just played around them, hid under the stairways and under the building, and you know, all kinds of. Didn't happen to confront a skunk any time, but we were lucky. But I particularly remember one of those weeks, which really left a very strong mark on me and an impression on me. It was a wonderful week. Lots of really lusty singing of hymns, you know, on off-key pianos. And, we just had a grand time.
I wish we had a tape recording of that.
Yeah, I know. And there was one man, when I was moving from my old home to a new one this year, tossed out a little flyer, which I should have kept, picture of one of the preachers who came from New York City. I can see his face clearly now. He had white hair and a white goatee, and he was something, and he really made a real impression on me. And speaking of Auditorium Park, I hadn't thought of this till now, but Bruce Reed lived in Auditorium Park then.
Yeah.
Lived over here at the cottage in which they lived, which was called the Ark. Has been torn down. I think I've seen probably 9 or 10 cottages removed, destroyed and torn down, probably for safety reasons, in Auditorium Park. But the Reeds, Dr. and Mrs. Reed, a very dignified couple, he a retired Navy dentist, and their family had the Ark, and we hung out there. And Bruce played the piano. He still is able to play. He's a wonderful pianist, and he has hands as large as hams, and his fingers just stretched out on that keyboard, and it didn't matter what we wanted, Bruce could pound it out. When I was thinking how different the noise level is around here now than it was then, and people loved it. So when people complain now of kids making noise, I find that so hard to understand.
Well, you can remember being a young person yourself, maybe.
Yeah,
perhaps, and
we had such a good time. There was no mischief. There was nothing wrong. And we were allowed, I'd forgotten this till this moment, by the caretaker of what's now, what's the house on the hill? It used to be the Pingries, and then it was...
Harriet, Jean Evans.
Oh, yes, that's right. Anyway, we were allowed to go up there. There's nobody living there, but we were allowed to go up there. Now, can you imagine saying to a bunch of teenagers, 12 or 14 of us, oh, sure, go up. So we romped around and played and rolled down the banking and turned somersaults, and we just had a grand time. and that was a real privilege, and it wasn't all cut away in the front the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
wooded?
Yeah, it was more wooded, and then, that was fun. Some people dared to climb the water tower, but I never had that much gumption. And every year we had a trip to Islesboro.
Now, who would have organized
that? There was a retired sea captain, or maybe he was a fisherman, I don't know. But anyway, he lived right in back of the inn, had a little cottage, he lived alone. His name was Captain Gooden, G-O-O-D-E-N. I have his autograph in my autograph book, which my granddaughter, Sarah Spollett, now owns. So Captain Gooden had a launch, and it carried, I don't know, 20 to 30 people. So every year, this was organized, and you paid your money up front, and Captain Gooden took a group of people to Islesboro. We took our own lunches, but he, when we got there, he dug clams, or maybe he did before, I don't know, but anyway, he would have a clam feed for us included in this. We would jump off the boat, absolutely wonderful, wonderful beach, lovely sandy beach.
Uh-huh.
that was always one of the high points.
And this was, at this time, there was no junior yacht club,
no
sailing school?
No.
You weren't doing this under the auspices of an organization?
No, it was just folks wanting to be together.
Yeah.
No, nothing like that, nothing organized. And speaking of picnics, many nights, my aunt and Jeanette Tardif, who was a little girl then, and her sister Marilyn, and my mother, and my brother, and I, and a bunch of us would go down on the rocks around 6 o'clock and have a picnic. And the last cottage down in the park here on the left was called the Rockport Cottage, and Captain Torrey lived there, and he was a retired captain from the Boston to Bangor steamboat line. So it was always a great treat to us to be down on the rocks, have Captain Torrey come out on his porch and wave to the boat and have them salute with their, you know, big horn, whistle, whatever. And they came quite close to the shore, so they could see us, and we could see them. So that was super. And every summer we had a swim meet, or a water meet, I don't know which we called it, but off the dock. And there was only one float then. It went down on the south side of the dock. Okay. And then out beyond that, there was a raft to which we could swim, and there was a tower, diving tower on that. And we had, at that time, we had quite a colony of people who came from Panama every year.
Panama?
Panama.
Yeah. Do you know what the connection was? Or how
I don't know
how
they got here originally, but one after another would tell, come to this wonderful place. And I remember Audrey Hudson, particularly, was an absolutely incredibly wonderful diver.
Mm-hmm.
I can see her clearly, and I can see her father clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Van Fleets were part of the Panama group originally, although I staked my life on that. But anyway, we had swimming meets. There were probably, I have a postcard somewhere, probably in Mellows though. Or it would be 20 or 30 kids competing. We had relays with, for instance, a watermelon. Imagine passing a watermelon back and forth in the relay in the water. We had little tub races for the small kids with paddles, and they paddled and, of course, capsized. Mm-hmm. There were rowing races, diving contests, all kinds of swimming contests. And the boys, some of them wore bathing caps so they could swim faster in the water. And there were prizes. And it was a big enough event so that pictures were taken and postcards made. You could buy postcards.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yep.
I've never seen one of those postcards.
I have one, but as you say, I think it's home, but maybe one somewhere in this cottage. I don't know. Oh, and once a year, at least once a summer, there was a formal dance at the golf club.
Oh,
so we always brought a formal gown.
Did people go in pairs on dates or just anybody?
Both ways. Some, mostly all of us just went. And I don't remember that we had cars available, so I think we walked walked home. That was the big time of the summer. And it was one of my jobs always to go to the pump before every meal and get a pump pitcher full of cold water for our meal. Let's see, Atlantic Highway camp meetings, and the cottage is gone. Oh, and we often walked to Belfast because we didn't have a way to get back and forth. And the movies were continuous then. Of course, there was just one feature.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they had two features, one biggie and then another one. Mm-hmm. Then we'd have cartoons, newsreels, because, of course, there was no TV or anything like that. We got our news, a week or so after it happened, mm-hmm. on the newsreels,
mm-hmm.
and the previews. And so I can remember when a bunch of us walked up to see the first filming of Showboat.
Oh!
I think it was Irene Dunne. Mm-hmm. And, oh, man's name just skipped right away from me. But anyway, we were so absolutely taken by this thing that we sat through it twice.
Wow.
So it was probably a total of about 4 or 5 hours we sat in the theater. The dock was still, you know, a very, very important focal point.
As it still is.
As it still is. And as my son Peter said, this is the summer that never was.
Because our dock
a
new one is being constructed, and
that's
it's not
right.
usable yet.
We hope it's being constructed.
The careful listener might be able to hear the jackhammers in the background.
Once in a while. But how customs, have changed, it was not at all unusual for all of us to get together, and that meant parents, little kids, teenagers, and go for a walk in the evening.
Mm.
And we played silly games while we were walking. And we loved to look into other people's cottages and see what they looked like. And I guess you've probably heard of the Maine Sailing School.
Indeed.
Okay, well.
Were you a participant or a student?
No, I was not a participant. Uh-huh. I was a little bit older than those kids.
Uh-huh.
Jeanette Tardif and Ellie Ladner, and I guess, names are suddenly escaping
there
me.
There were a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of them, and many of them. I don't know if Don Knott was one of those. Those kids came from New Jersey, and they came year after year after year,
mm-hmm.
And never obviously told their parents of the lack of supervision that they had here. But they were, nothing had happened. They were good kids. And that the times were different. The
mm-hmm.
temptations were different. They weren't exposed on TV and everything else to all
sure.
kinds of things that they might try to do.
Yeah.
And so they were just good kids. And they roamed. And they were in different cottages here in Auditorium Park.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very, very active. They had a fleet of boats. Went out, as I say, with very inadequate supervision, and frequently were rescued by the Coast Guard.
Oh my.
And towed back in. And another, I'd forgotten this, very important at least once a summer event was to go, there's now a road, but, and it doesn't even go the same path we used to go, but anyway, to go up to the top of Mount Percival. Have you ever been up there?
I have not.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly how you get to the tippy top now, but there was a house up there, and we believed that a German spy lived in it during World War I. It was a great big house, and it had huge shutters, probably 6 feet, window closers, they were 6 feet long by probably 4 feet high, and those went up and hooked up, so uh-huh. We'd open those up, and we'd have this wonderful view of the bay, and I remember there were, and there was a tower up there, too, that I think was put there by the Coastal Geodetic Survey, uh-huh. whatever that is, uh-huh. and there was a medallion in a rock, and so we used to do a lot of blueberrying up there, yeah. And we'd take a picnic. Mm-hmm. Again, very, very often, these were family events,
yes.
But times have changed, society has changed. They would not happen now, things like that. But those were good times, and there was a little one-room schoolhouse out on Atlantic Highway, which is in Austria. I think it's the first house in on the right. Was the schoolhouse, but it was, I don't remember if it was torn down and rebuilt or whether this same little house remodeled.
Uh-huh.
So I've seen that go from a one-room schoolhouse to
the Drinkwater
school,
yeah.
Which, you know, it's been quite exciting to see.
Sure.
But I just want to say how unusual a place it has been, such a unique place where people, out of curiosity, drive in, stay, and come forever
come
after.
Come forever and come
yeah,
back.
That's
and
right.
Did you come here with your own children years later?
My children and my grandchildren.
And your grandchildren.
Yeah, I just talked to my 22-year-old granddaughter this morning. She said, Grandma, I can't believe that I haven't been to Bayside this summer. But the lifestyle at the moment is not permit that.
Well, your two grandchildren who live here now are outstanding members of the community.
Oh, yeah, they love
enjoying
it. And then two of my other young grandchildren, unfortunately, parents who've built a house on Martha's Vineyard. So they're very unfortunate children, but they always look forward to coming to Bayside. They talk about it all year, and they came this year. And 1 year I had them by myself for 2 weeks, and then their mom and dad came and picked them up, stayed a few days. And that was 2 years ago. They weren't able to come last year, which has always been a point of sadness for them.
Sure.
Today, this year we opened the car doors, they were gone. They knew just where to go, just for whom they were looking.
Sure.
And
a wonderful
it was
place
back,
for children.
Back home. They just felt wonderful about it. And Fred and I used to always bring our two oldest grandchildren, Mark and Kate, for 2 weeks. And Mark was a great fisherman. He would get up. He was only 9 at the time, 8 or 9. And he'd get up all by himself and head down to the float and fish and fish and fish. And when I'd wake up, I'd take down peanut butter sandwiches and milk for his breakfast because he didn't want to come home.
Tell me, Amy, who are some of the people that are in Bayside now that you remember from your...
Al Keith. Early?
Okay.
Merle Martin.
Uh-huh.
Bruce. Ruth Page.
Uh-huh.
Billy's mother. And I remember Billy when he was a little kid. Across the street here.
Harriet
and her sister. Their name was Cross at that time. They were young businesswomen then when we first came. Did I say Al Keith?
Al Keith, yeah.
Yeah. And Peggy Bragg, Janet Collett, who was Janet
Patty. Yeah.
They were probably. Oh, and the Leitners. The first time we came here, this is another reason we said, oh, can't be the place, the Lightness Cottage, the big one.
Which one was that?
That's the big white one that's right opposite here. I can't think of the name of it.
An auditorium park?
No, yeah, Narcissmont, I think it might be called. But anyway, it's a great big white that sits right on the river roads fork down there. That house was in absolute total disrepair. And the front door was on this end on the street. And there were, four or five very poverty-stricken children. It was a sad, sad, sad family. But they roamed in and out of the store. They had no steps. And the chickens roamed in and out the door, too.
This is the first I've ever heard of chickens in Bayside, Amy.
Well, then the Lightness bought that. And I think Dr. Reed bought it, actually. I'm pretty sure it was Dr. Reed, because Dr. Reed and Bruce did a great deal of remodeling, restoring, and new building. So anyway, then the Lightness bought that cottage. My brother met his wife here.
Oh, that's a good story.
Yeah.
What were they doing at the time? Were they?
Well, we were here as kids.
Yeah.
And Dot was here with her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in the little house that we always call the dollhouse. It's for sale.
Yes, the
right
honey house.
Right. And it was a very sad thing that left the family. But Dot's grandmother died, and Ben and Dot were way out in New York State, and for whatever reasons, they were never kept up to date on taxes or anything like that. Nobody ever told them what was going on, and they were so involved in their own lives, it didn't occur to them. So they suddenly received a notice that said that the town of Northport had taken the cottage, and it had been sold.
What bad news to get.
It was bad news. But they were in no position to do anything about it, so it went.
Yes.
Let's see, who else? I can't remember who else there is around now.
Quite a few. You've named quite a few of them.
Uh-huh.
There'll be more in town soon when the sailing school has its reunion.
Yes,
up.
Yes, that's
mm-hmm.
right. Well, of course, as I mentioned, Ellie.
Sure.
Wagner. And Duke Mahoney was a local handyman.
Do
you ever hear that name?
No, never have.
Well, that was quite interesting. Duke, I mean, we all thought Duke was great. He was, you know, a real local guy.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he came down to the dock. He used to like to come down to talk to us. So all these teenagers. He had this big patch over his eye. He said, "Duke, what happened?" He said, "Well, I was chopping wood, and I came out, and my axe caught on the clothesline, came down and hit me in the eye."
Mm.
So he said, "Oh, did you go to the hospital?" No, just put a little Lysol in it. So that's how it was at that time, as far as he was concerned. I mean, you dealt with what you had.
Sure.
let's see. Oh, the mail came in twice a day.
That's remarkable.
Came
how did
down
it get
to
here?
The post office,
uh-huh.
And people had little boxes with a little combination gizmo on there. Oh, I guess they're still down there.
So.
Players, right. So, and you waited morning and afternoon for the mail car. Lena Page was one of the people who brought the mail in.
It's Lena Page related to Bill Page?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And I guess her name was Page then, but anyway, Lena would drive down and take the bags of mail in, and Miles Dodge, Mr. Dodge was the postmaster.
Uh-huh.
And Miles, there were natives here, and going out toward Dos Amigos on the right, well, Samuelsons live there now, the big white house, do you know that is?
Yeah.
Well, in their driveway, there's the remnants, the vestiges of a big smoke bush. Have you seen that?
I'll try to notice it the next time.
Okay, well, when we were youngsters, that bush, now this, you understand, is 60 years ago.
Gosh.
That bush was four or five times the size that it is. So it must have been very, very old
yes.
at that time.
Yes.
And it was absolutely huge mass of these smoke blossoms, mm-hmm. whatever you call them. So anyway, Miles was one of our gang down here, mm-hmm. His father was the postmaster.
I see.
And he sorted the mail, and if you didn't have a box, you were one of the fortunate people that uh-huh. had money to rent a box,
sure.
you received your mail general delivery.
Uh-huh.
There was this long line of people, and you took the turn.
Uh-huh.
But it was a time every day for people to gather.
I'll
and
bet. Certainly.
We got to know each other. We knew people much more than we do now. Oh, the Dykstras. Those
oh.
were here. Those
uh-huh.
folks were here
uh-huh.
When I was first here.
And then the inn, were there people coming and staying at the inn during
not
that
a great
period?
Deal.
No.
No. That, to my knowledge, has, in my lifetime, has never been what I would call a flourishing business.
So that was a lot earlier
mm-hmm.
when the people used to come on the ships. And
get yes. Here. Yeah. Yeah. And the boat didn't stop here. It went, as I say, it went by, but
yeah.
it didn't stop. Then, of course, down here in Undertown Park, next to Merle Martin, is the Malm Cottage, which is now owned by Libby Carlson
okay.
and her sister Sue. Keith
mm-hmm.
is with her. Sue,
mm-hmm.
Well, they've been here. They live next to Grandpa Hook in Melrose. That's how they happened to come here, because Grandpa Hook is the one who owned the cottage next door.
Okay.
Let's see, the cottage, the site on which Dick and Jeanette's Tardif's cottage house now stands was the site of two huge, huge, huge buildings. One was the Morrill, M-O-R-R-I-L-L, cottage, and the other one was the bank, no, well, it's gone. Anyway,
when we came up there.
Mm-hmm.
What became of those two?
Well, the one next to my aunt's had to be torn down because it was so bad. And when it was torn down, it became obvious that the Morrill Cottage, because of the tremendous length of it, and it again was made of those huge, anywhere from 12 to 18 inch wide hemlock boards.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the center, it sagged.
Oh my.
And it was, as I said, four stories in the back, looking out
uh-huh.
at the ugly auditorium that was there, and three stories on the front. And it was a long, long, long cottage. It started where this cottage ends, but it went out way beyond this here.
Uh-huh.
So to repair it,
sure.
and it would still be a big, ugly old clunker
uh-huh.
of a cottage. So, anyway, Matt bought that piece of property
uh-huh.
on which the cottage had stood, and with her own tore that one down.
Your aunt is Jeanette's mother, do I
yeah.
have that right?
Yeah.
Okay, and what was her last name?
Hook.
Okay.
Yeah, Holly Hook.
Holly.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when this cottage was torn down next to the Arno here,
okay.
between the Arno and the Bangor Chapel,
mm-hmm.
out from under came a skunk with two or three little ones trailing along, and everyone said, "Look at the skunk!" And Jeanette Tardif was a little bitty thing, and she said, "That's a skunk?" And we said, "Yes." She said, "I thought skunks were flat." She'd only seen them in the highway. So that's another family tradition. I thought skunks were flat. Oh, golly, I don't know. So, as I say, the Leitners, and of course we love them dearly. Lovely, lovely people. And there, and Nancy's father and mother were idols of ours.
Oh,
we thought they were just the cat's meow. And he was a wonderful diver. There was a lot of diving done in those
uh-huh.
days. Because we did have a diving board from the wharf, too.
Sure.
As well as, prior to that, the one out on the float.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do I know any more?
Well, I think you've given me a wonderful interview. I imagine you know lots more.
I'd be so into my head.
Sure. Well, I'll thank you and tell you how much I appreciate it, and so will all of the people who are privileged to hear this and read its transcript. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.